her, and then we can have the town as the, as our.
Okay, next is Nathan Wallach from Stetson University.
Thanks. I'm going to be talking a little bit different here. I'm going to be talking about media representations of the laptop as a musical instrument. It sort of ties in with what Bruno was talking about. Sort of ties in with what some themes that we've been talking about throughout the symposium so far. But really, kind of reflecting on this growing culture of laptop performance and how laptop performers are represented in the media. If you're like me, you've probably done an interview with somebody in the media, somebody who's in the newspaper who's writing up something about your performance, and you get the same kind of questions. And there's this seems to be this perpetual newness, this perpetual novelty about what it is we do. And I was kind of interested in looking back at the media over the last couple of years, the last few decades, to find out where is the kind of the starting point where this starts to seep into the media that's geared toward the general audience, not a specialized audience, but a general audience, and where is it truly new that this the kind of tipping point as the representations of laptop music in the media, and for the purposes of this, both electronica and laptop ensembles and orchestras are kind of conflated in the media's eye, basically, and so we're going to kind of be looking at things that kind of dance between those two different structures, and I was glad to see some of that in Bruno's talk, kind of looking at both electronica, both the academic side of things. But overall, my goals are to identify early pieces of media that, and by media, I'm not talking about the media that Steve was talking about with preserving video and audio recordings, but newspaper items, publications that refer to laptop music. Okay, my emphasis is on United States sources. I'm looking at things that have a general national audience and try to trace some of the development of these stereotypes. We've been talking about the email syndrome, the kind of the stillness, and where does that so. One, where does laptop music seep into a general audience? But then where does the stereotype seep into the general audience that's kind of publicized as well? And kind of start to reflect on the issues. So my process here, one, I've set up a Google alert, laptop music performance. I've been monitoring it since 2009 just to see items. And you can see, this is last week, there was an item on the Princeton Laptop Orchestra. There was an item actually on the SLEO conference down here that was covered in PC World. I have to kind of filter through some of the junk, though, because performance has to do with, you know, how fast your processor is as well sometimes. So that's where, I guess, the human element comes in and kind of selecting and curating things that come across on the Google alert. But I think those three terms together produce kind of pretty good results in terms of catching news items. The second piece of my research was actually digging into the LexisNexis database, which it's a well-known database of newspaper and media media sources. And if you search for the terms, LexisNexis goes back to 1980, if you go use the online database. So I felt pretty confident there weren't going to be laptop music articles before 1980, so that's good. If you search for the terms laptop music, it actually produces 991 results, pretty manageable, okay? And if you search for laptop music performance, it produces 110 results, okay? And in looking back to the timeline as far as where the tipping point is, where it starts to seep into the general national audience for media coverage, I've zeroed in on these four articles that appear from late 2001 to about middle 2003. And these are cited in my extended abstract, which is in the proceedings, so you don't need to scribble these down. You can pull it up on the proceedings if you want. But just to talk about these and kind of the ways that they're talking about the laptop, Bruno talked about the invisibility of the instrument, quoting from Monolake, but in the media's eyes and the way that it's represented in the general media, the laptop is the instrument. And the question we need to consider is, okay, do we want to go along with that? Do we want to overcome that? Do we want to educate them? Those sorts of things. Those are the kind of the questions that we want to consider as a community. So looking back at that 2001 article, this is a little blurb that appeared in kind of a year in summary New York Times magazine blurb, okay, with the title being Laptop Composing. So the laptop as a compositional tool. But even embedded in there, there's references to the laptop as an instrument. Herbie Hancock has added an iBook to the arsenal of instruments that he has on stage, basically. So adopting some of the language that we talk about instruments, referring to the laptop themselves. There's also some references to Matmos at the time was doing a laptop accompaniment with Bjork, so that's also referenced in the article. So it's an interesting thing to look at. Actually, NPR, All Things Considered, did a brief segment on entitled Laptop Music by Will Hermes, okay? You can pull up the transcript from them. I haven't actually been able to obtain the audio from this, but the transcript is available via LexisNexis. And it's surprising to me, we've referenced what I call the stereotype, okay? It's there right from the beginning. Will Hermes, in his 2002, 10 years ago, okay? It's 10 years ago here, folks. He's talking about the band performing live can be a bit like watching grass grow, okay? That email syndrome that we've been talking about, that it's not very exciting to watch, okay? I think one of the good things, though, Hermes does get right is he talks about laptop music more as an approach rather than a genre. And so I think that's a good aspect of his article, or of his presentation, his segment for All Things Considered at that time. The largest focus, the largest scope, the biggest piece in these early years of laptop music and general media publications comes from Wired Magazine. In their May 2002 issue, they have an article that has the kind of kitschy title of Songs in the Key of F12. It's available online. You can pull it up on their database, and it's a good resource if you're looking to introduce students to laptop music and kind of looking at a historical perspective of laptop music. Again, 10 years ago, 10 years on, we're on from this kind of seeping into a general media audience. But you can see here from the subtitle that it kind of, we're talking about the laptop being turned into a musical instrument via software, okay? And then they kind of move into this man versus machine paradigm, which is a kind of a subtext for a lot of consideration. I think looking at some of the other, there was an article in the Wall Street Journal, I think around 2008, where they're talking about this kind of man versus machine and I don't know that that's necessarily the right frame to be thinking about laptop music, the fact that the machine's going to put musicians out of work because it can now do things, you know, differently or new or whatever. Moving on to 2003, this is actually covering, it's a bigger article in the New York Times called Clash, Then Synthesis, Joys of the Laptop Jam, where they're kind of covering these laptop jams that are happening at this open air gathering that's happening in New York City. The same actual gathering is actually covered in the Wired article as well. But the idea that the people are using their software and hardware to jam, to conduct a musical jam, just like they would with guitars and drums and that sort of stuff. So again, the language is starting to be adopted. The laptop is starting to be identified as the thing, as the instrument that is on stage, and that's kind of the locus of activity. It kind of moves on from there and blossoms. As I've kind of waded through the Google alerts and the LexisNexis articles, we get a lot of different kind of reference points, things that are referring to the laptop as the instrument. There's two instruments on stage, the guitar and the laptop. This second one's actually some coverage of work that Dan Truman did, right, with the American Composers Orchestra, that laptops were among the instruments on stage. Again, the thing that I've tried to kind of parse out in surveying all of this media is how the language of instruments is kind of adopted and grafted onto laptops. And it was surprising to me how early on that happens, and we're now kind of 4 or 5 years on from where this is kind of starting to become commonplace. Musicians start to talk about having laptop gigs, okay, and people performing live on laptops with kind of DJ style. Again, the conflation here between electronica genre and also the laptop orchestra genre, they kind of talk about it in a lot very similar ways in media reports. Musicians talk about picking up a laptop and kind of moving on. You know, we think about picking up our instrument, picking up our laptop, and moving on and developing a performance style. I like this one in particular because it's the guitar that's accompanying the laptop. It's not the other way around, basically. So it kind of the primacy of the laptop as being the primary source of sound making. Okay, but in looking at this again, the stereotype that we've been talking about comes to mind. Okay, I'll bring up one of my pictures from before, right? The very common, although this is, I'm assuming, not a live performance in front of an audience, but the common visual of a bunch of performers sitting around staring at screens is kind of a very common, visual associated with laptop music. And how does this get addressed in the media? So, in talking about the stereotype, as I've termed it here, We can go back to that 2003 article, The Clash, Then Synthesis. John Appleton of Dartmouth, well known in the electroacoustic community, talked about how he's actually quoted in this 2003 article in the New York Times as talking about the performers understand what they're doing, but the audience doesn't. So that, again, very early on, realizing this disconnect between the audience understanding what's going on and what we ourselves understand is what's going on. The performers spend most of their time huddled behind the laptop, okay? Again, it's this representation. But then we start to see performers start to react against this, okay? This is Ed Simmons of Chemical Brothers talking about, you know, people, the fact that the audience understands how a guitar works, like some of the same stuff that Bruno was talking about, that they don't quite understand, though, what's going on with a laptop, what laptop music entails and what it is that they're doing and how them wrestling with that idea of how they get that point across. You have some reaction against this from electronica performers as well. You've got Book of Shade talking about the fact that we're not at all a laptop. We use laptops, but we're not a laptop act. I don't know, whatever that means, basically, kind of reacting against the stereotype. Then talking about MuTech, which is a very famous electronica gathering that happens in Montreal every year, the fact that it was only laptops. It was just so boring to watch all these people at laptops, and we want to get beyond that. We want to have some more excitement of that. Even our ensemble that we keep pointing to, Plork, as kind of the originators of the Leo kind of the Lork model. When they were performed in Chicago at Northwestern, there was some coverage in the media in the Chicago Tribune. They talked about how it was good that the laptop added some spontaneity from what had been the traditional academic conference. So they recognized a good element of spontaneity. The student newspaper was not so kind. They talked about how it could have been just a bunch of students, you know, checking their email. That's the same things that working on their homework, writing their term papers, that same thing we've been talking about. So in summary, in terms of what it is that we need to consider, it's like, how can we overcome the stereotype, okay? Because it's out there. It's not just something that we recognize. It's something that is in the media, and it's in the media going back to the very early coverage in 2001, 2002, okay? And so it's pervasive. And how do we talk about it? How do we overcome it? How do we address it? Is it through new uses of controllers? Is it through educating our audience? Because it's certainly out there. And certainly as we are doing gigs, as we are doing performances, we're going to have more opportunities to interact with the media. How do we, in doing these little tit-for-tat back and forth, asking these questions about, isn't this new and novel? How can we start to address that stereotype and educating, using our access to the media through these interviews that we do with concerts and associated, how can we start to overcome that stereotype? I think it's good to kind of think about the laptop music as an approach rather than a genre. I think we don't want to get to a point where people start to stereotype it as just a genre. There are so many styles of music that can come out of laptop music, and we've seen great examples of that even here today in these paper presentations, and we will see it in the concerts that are being programmed here at this event. How can we continue to, I think, recognize it as an approach and still talk about what our commonalities are in a symposium like this and beyond this symposium? My own research, I'm continuing this as I've kind of done this survey. I've started getting exposed to the concept of frames and framing, which is used in media studies and communication studies. I'm a novice at media studies, okay? I will admit that. And I've kind of been picking the brain of some of my colleagues in the media studies as far as how to analyze this body of newspaper articles and media articles and start to identify trends and cataloging it in a way that someone from media studies or communication studies. So, or if some of you have a background in that area, I'd be love to talk and collaborate with somebody on that. I've been collaborating with some of my media studies colleagues at Stetson as well. But I think that's going to be, I guess, a good way to talk about this in a way that builds off of standard practices in media studies. So that's my last slide in terms of discussions and questions. So, yeah. So Jeff first. Yeah.
I mean, it's not a novel thing to us, which mm-hmm. is something that we deal with on a regular basis, but to most of the general public, the target audience of the New York Times and probably even Wired Magazine, it is a novelty. And if that novelty angle gets us press coverage, I think we should learn how to take advantage
sure.
of the novelty.
Yeah.
Because the press thing is they have to have a story. And at this point, the novelty is the story.
Right.
So...
Well, I
that can be positive.
Yeah, I agree that the novelty can be positive, but I also think that we as we have these encounters, we also need to the stereotype is also something that we can I guess is the scary thing that I'm worried about everything kind of slipping into because it does show up and it is in the media covers that I've reviewed and it shows up time and time again. And I'm trying to kind of build a more rigorous way to kind of trace it, its development. But you can see very early on, they start talking about this stereotype of people are just staring at the screens and I don't understand what's going on. In that novel, yes, we can use the novelty as kind of an entry point, but we also need to be aware of the stereotype and not be naive enough to think that because it's novel, they're going to be forgiving of staring at the screen. Does
yeah,
that make sense? That would be my kind of point.
Mm-hmm. And I'm having a hard time believing that like, body posture and physical gesture is actually that different. Right? So if you think about like an oboist, mm-hmm. right? They're just sitting in a chair playing an oboe. That's not any more exciting than someone sitting in a chair at a thing. It's identical. So I'm wondering if the body posture is a complete red herring. It's actually that the audience just doesn't understand the music. Right? So like
yeah.
Sort of non-narrative sounds happening, and they blame that weirdness on the fact
that yeah, I mean, that's another interpretation. Yeah, that it's just a kind of red herring account for the strange sounds that are coming out of the speakers. Yeah.
That's interesting. I went to a professional event.
Yeah.
But it is that kind of engagement with the audience. I suppose as a result of that, the question I had, what do you want the audience to gain from the experience of coming out to a client event?
Sure. Yeah. I see two hands. I don't know who was three hands, so who's first? Thumb war or what?
Go back to the novelty and the stereotype and our role, perhaps, in our coming from our community in those portrayals. And I wonder if part of the novelty was promoted from day one in these kind of clever titles that we each come up with for our ensembles, explore and these little things. They roll off our tongue and they have laptop in them, you know, we're really good foreground again. And you contrast that with for instance, Perry mentioned Black Swan, this kind of goth, or somebody mentioned yesterday, this kind of goth band that happens to be doing a lot with laptops and sensors, and you get Radiohead, and, you know, thrust MSP into a much wider circle by Johnny Greenwood messing with stuff on stage, but they're Radiohead. So I wonder if that's a piece of the shift that will contribute to what you're
Yeah, I think the naming of the ensemble. We're a mobile performance group for a reason. We're not a laptop ensemble. We don't think of ourselves as a laptop orchestra. We're very much rooted in kind of exploring technology and doing performance. So, will it be laptops 5 years from now? I don't know. So, yeah. Yeah, David.
I just wanted to point out that maybe the novelty won't go away unless it becomes mainstream. Really, the symphonic orchestra today is a novel in our culture.
Oh, yeah.
The great majority of our culture today has no idea what a symphonic orchestra does or goes to their concerts. I mean, it's as much a novelty and it has as much stereotype as what we're talking about here. My daughter, who's a junior in high school, just went on a field trip to our local symphony, the Florida Symphony concert, and they were doing some pretty traditional orchestral things. And at one point, 2.5 hours, may I say, into the concert, she texts me and says, "How much longer can this go on?" Because it was just as much a novelty to her. She had no idea what the world was going on, and she wasn't alone.
Yeah. Do you have a quick point, Bruno? Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for the figure. I think one reason, maybe one comment, one question could be why I think it's so easy to the media and the audience to confuse what's the role of the laptop, but the Oval, for example, like our friend said, is a specialized hardware. Like, you only use the Oval for that. You don't check your email. And the laptop's an interesting case where, you know, people use for everything.
People use
for
everything.
That's why it's interesting to see that thing.
And they think they understand what it can do.
So my question is, on the sense, I wonder if you, in your media relationship experience, I don't know if one interesting approach would be to feed this research back into a willing journalist or a more sophisticated journalist. They would see how they themselves are actually portraying laptop and see how they would react by seeing the stereotypes there.
Right, and that's where I've said, I've alluded to the fact that I've been talking to and working on possibly collaborating with someone from the Media Studies and Communication Studies Department at Stetson, someone who does, you know, media shoegazing for a living, basically, because that's kind of what I'm trying to fit this and make sense of this and use some of the tools that they used for analyzing the media to kind of get a better sense of how this trend is developing. But, I mean, I frankly was surprised that it goes back as far as 2001, 2002. We have these big media sources that are covering laptop music and that the stereotype is right there staring us in the face, that they're trying to relate to that. Wow, there's a lot of hands, and I think we're over time, though. So we should probably continue the discussion. Let's continue discussion over lunch. If I could say two things real quick. If I've done this right, I just recorded my talk. So if anybody wants a copy of it, I can give it to you on your little thumb drive, and I'd say also I want to thank. I know my name is on the list of the executive committee, but Steve and Jesse have been doing a lot of the heavy lifting on this, so I feel kind of embarrassed that my name is up there with those other people. So if we could give Steve and Jesse a round of applause for all the work they're doing on this conference. So. Well, let's go have lunch.